Jesus took Peter, James, and John to the mountain. Then Jesus glowed. What happens when somebody glows? It's a sign from God, right? Except it's not always a sign from God. When Jesus glowed, it was pretty intense. It was something amazing. When Moses glowed way back when, it was pretty intense. It was amazing. When Aaron, Moses' brother, glowed, it was pretty intense. It was amazing. When Miriam, Moses' sister, glowed, she had leprosy. Shall we get into misogyny in the Bible today? Nah. It's there. We'll talk about it another time. This experience right here was intense. An extraordinary experience. Glowing faces and clothes. Dead guys talking, cloud voices. It was something they would remember for the rest of their lives. And Jesus told them, don't tell anyone. There are other times where Jesus told people to keep quiet, and guess what? They didn't. Matthew 16:20, then he sternly ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Also Mark 8:30 and Luke 9:21. Matthew 8:1-4. When Jesus had come down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And there was a leper who came to him and knelt before him, saying, Lord, if you choose, you can make me clean. He stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I do choose, be made clean. Immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Then Jesus said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone. But go, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. It's also in Mark and Luke. Mark 7:32-36, they brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him aside in private, away from the crowd, and put his fingers into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then he looked up to heaven. He sighed and said to him, Ephphatha, which means be opened. And immediately his ears were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered him to tell no one. But the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. Jesus told folks to keep quiet, but they didn't keep quiet. Why do we know they didn't keep quiet, even if the story didn't say they didn't keep quiet? Because we know the story. So yeah, there. Peter, James, and John didn't keep quiet. People in the Bible didn't keep quiet when Jesus did these extraordinary things. But that's not exactly the point from today. Here, there's some more. Jesus also said this, do not be afraid. He said that. There are many other times when Jesus said, do not be afraid. Matthew 14, after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. They said, it's a ghost! And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. Also in Mark and John. Matthew 28. So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them and said, greetings. And they came to him, took hold of his feet and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. They will see me there. However, how often have the words do not be afraid or don't be scared sunk in right away? Don't be scared, it's all right. Just because someone says snap out of it doesn't mean that you do. Instructions like chill out, come on, chill out, or oh, don't be scared, or stop being so dramatic. No one's ever heard that, right? No one. They usually have the opposite effect. So when you're afraid, you're afraid. For whatever reason, you're afraid. Feeling your emotions is way better than trying to stifle them. I don't think Jesus meant to stifle your emotions. They were calm, reassuring words. There's no reason to be afraid. It'll be all right. Jesus seems to me the take a moment person, not the immediate person like that. I'm sure Peter, James, and John were still afraid. It's also not the point that I really want to make today, but it's an important point. Jesus told them something else too. It's related to the part where he told them to keep quiet about the experience. He said, keep quiet about the vision. Did you catch that? Were you reading along there? He said their experience was a vision. What do you do with that? You may be wondering, wait a minute, Kirk, are you saying the experience wasn't real? Are you saying it didn't happen? Are you attacking the Bible? That would be what we do in today's political climate. We find just the tiniest little thing that we don't agree with and we attack it hard. No, but what I'm saying is, in our Bible reading for today, Jesus called the experience a vision. The Greek word for what Jesus expressed is orama. It appears in the New Testament at least 13 times, and in all but one case, the word is translated as vision, including this case. Other Bible translations don't translate this verse from this morning's reading the same way, however. From the New International Version, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone about what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised." In the New Living Translation, Jesus said, "Don't tell anyone about what you have seen." The New Century Version, not to tell anyone about what they had seen. The Message, Jesus swore them to secrecy. Don't breathe a word of what you've seen. But the King James Version, of course the only version that we should ever use, if it was good enough for Peter, it was good enough for me. You ever heard that? Okay, Peter didn't speak Old English. Here's the King James Version. As they came down from the mountain, Jesus charged them, saying, "Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead." The New King James Version, the Revised Standard Version, the New American Standard Version, they also use vision. And you may be asking, what about the other chapters that recount the Transfiguration? The fancy name for the time that Jesus glowed, which means changed. He was changed. In Mark 9, Jesus tells the disciples to keep quiet about what they have seen. There's the Greek word, it's eido, to see. It can be something that really is happening or a vision of something. In Luke 9, Jesus doesn't tell them to keep quiet, but the end of the reading, he says that the disciples kept quiet in those days about what they had seen. And in that case, the word is horaro, related to horama, vision. So what's the point of all of this? And is it the point I'm trying to make? All of that. Second question first. Yes. And here it is. The Bible is filled with wonder and mystery. It's filled with people who spent their entire lives not getting it. It's filled with people who asked questions, doubted, believed, stopped believing, struggled to understand, kept trying. And it seems that the ones who knew without a doubt what the answers to all the questions were met with disdaining words from Jesus. What happened on the mountain with Peter, James, John, Jesus, Moses, and Elijah? Were they there? The Bible says that it was a vision. When it doesn't call it a vision, it just says that they had seen something. And I think it's very important to ask the question, do I have to know exactly what happened? And then ask, how did this extraordinary experience affect the disciples? How does their experience affect folks today? How does it affect me? See, the disciples came down from the mountain forever changed because they experienced something extraordinary. The Bible verses describe Jesus being transfigured, transformed. But I think its far-reaching effect is to teach that God is in the process of transforming us from whatever we have been into whatever we are becoming. And transformative work in our lives is something very, very good. I don't know how you are being transformed today, but I want to offer just the smallest piece of advice about how to react to it. Peter didn't understand what was going on, but he reacted in a way that seemed most natural. He offered hospitality to the guests he saw. His first instinct was to show kindness. So that may that be the first instinct that we have too as we are transformed. May that be the first instinct we have too, no matter who we are or where we are on life's journey. This week, Ash Wednesday, Wednesday night, Mardi Gras on Tuesday. Bake everything, all the sugar, all the stuff. Eat it on Tuesday. Now, if you don't give it up and you have sweets during Lent, that's okay. Maybe bring sweets to somebody who could use some sweets. Or maybe bring some fruit or some vegetables. This week, pay attention to the instinct to show kindness. At least a couple of times, do something that expresses that kindness to people around you. Send a card to someone for no reason. Tip the person who served you double what you usually do, triple what you usually do. Tip the whole bill. Reach out to someone you've been estranged from. Start a conversation. I hope your week is simply dazzling.